Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're here live at the SiriusXM studios here in the Wynn and Las Vegas. And we got three gamblers up here with me, the incredible Noel Russell, the leader in AI, working with Alexa and Microsoft at the very beginning. Also a beta for ChatGPT. She knows more, she has forgotten more about AI than I know, and she loves it, which is making me love her. The Hall of Fame kicker himself and the philanthropist, the man with the biggest heart, Nick Lowry. Always a pleasure to have you back.
Well, I'm learning a lot today. It's really quite amazing.
It is really cool. And we have Jay Abraham Jr. there as the anchor. I mean, sorry, Rhett Power. He is empowering so many people as a coach and author, strategic marketer as well. So he's going to fit right in as our anchor person with the incredible guest that we're about to have. He's a repeat offender of the show Office Hours, the founder and CEO of the Abraham Group. He's a mentor of mine, a legend in the space. Talk about subject matter topic expertise. There's no one I would go to if I want to know more about marketing today and the strategic marketing expertise that he has given so many as a business consultant, world renowned, and just an all-around good guy. Jay Abraham, welcome back to Office Hours.
David, thank you so much. What a privilege to be reinvited. I'm honored.
Well, your content is amazing and you have so much of it to draw from. One of the things that I'm working at the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, is using a brand that's been around for 100 years, over half a billion books and content sold, but great leaders like you that were predecessors of you, friends of ours like Dr. Wayne Dyer or Bob Proctor, they have such a huge library of content that have made me. And it didn't take, but it seemed like weeks, maybe months, until their content dissipated in its presence because they did not build it on platforms that exist today. And although there's tons of DVDs and books and CDs of my heroes and mentors, it's hard to find and it's certainly not being promoted. What are you doing? Because you sit in that legendary category with Bob Proctor and Dr. Wayne Dyer, for example. What are you doing today to make sure that you are preserving the wisdom and the work that you've done throughout your life?
I'm always a little eclectic and contrarian. What I'm doing is a multiplicity of things. We regularly do 6-hour gratis training, which allows me to constantly integrate and evolve and upgrade the body of work. One thing I think that is unique about me, and it's not arrogant, it's just clinical, is I'm not really a tactician. I tend to have such a broad swath of ever-evolving content or expertise, or I guess you'd call it distinctions, David and group, on everything from strategy, business model, distribution channel, expansion, partnering, strategic alliances, co-branding, endorsement, recommended provider status, preeminence, reclamation of sunk cost, redeployment. And so I'm constantly, because I do most of the time, I don't teach, I teach indirectly, but I do hands-on frontline and capitalism, high-level clients. I'm always experimenting and making distinctions. And every one of my clients around the world becomes basically a Petri dish in a research laboratory that is constantly evolving. So I do programming to, number one, literally keep evolving it and introducing it to anybody that wants it. Number two, we've come out with 21 books. I've functionally sold in a hard copy, three of them. Well, one of them we sold originally. We sold 72,000 copies for $377 a piece. That was the original one. And that bought my beach house. The rest were trade books. And a true story, it's called Money Making Secrets of a Marketing Genius and Other Fortune Building Lessons. But now I just give them away digitally. We've probably given away or bequeathed or benefacted a million of them. We just basically pay and run ads to give them away. And we, most of the stuff I do is much higher end, so I can't really even monetize smaller people. I contribute frequently to people that have groups that are younger. Let's see what else I do. I just made a collaborative deal where there's an emerging platform of entrepreneurship called ASBN. It's a pretty interesting, but not a yet fully dynamic platform. They have about a half a million people that visit right now, but we're on point to expand that through my mechanisms to 5 or 6 million, maybe 10. And I'm giving everything away there, and I'm transferring a lot of the residency of a lot of my body of work to this, so that it has more legacy and also it has more institutional value for my estate. Let's see what else I'm doing. We have a commitment to come out with 4 books a year that I have a collaborator on. I can give him and he gets acknowledgement. I give him the topic. I frame it. He does it. I refine it. We publish it in Japan, so he gets paid. Then I give it away to everybody here digitally. Let's see what else. That's a few.
That's a good start. I want to introduce you to Noelle Russell. She's our resident AI expert as well. She knows from its inception.
It's a lot more than I do, David, because AI is something I'm involved in vicariously, but I didn't purport to be expert at. But go ahead.
I mean, that's a great segue to what I'm curious about. What exactly are you involved in? Like, what are you thinking about? One of the things I know, I've read so much of your content, and one of the things, like, people that have decades of experience, like, we're not making humans the way that we made them 50 years ago. And being 50, I know that that's true. And I have 6 kids myself, and it's just, they're growing up differently. They're learning differently. Like, they're swiping right and left. Like, they never have to face rejection. Like, a lot of what you talk about. I'm just wondering, have you thought about, from a longevity perspective, have you thought about how you might bottle this up in a way, leveraging AI in a way to make it last, you know, forever, creating a nearly you, or a, you know, digital version of you?
So if you, and we've not really done much with what I'm about to tell you, we spent a year and a half and got awful amount of money creating a super clone called J-I, J-A-Y hyphen I.
Yes, there we go.
we put, and you guys can go to askji.com and you can play with it, but we really haven't done a lot with it in the public market yet. We put 500 million proprietary words in. We put every book, we put every hot seat I've ever done, every $25,000 program. We put 50 other distinct programs that were very expensive. We put every interview of me. We put every program, every keynote I've ever done. It's all evolved, and it was very complex, and now it's available, but we're not really promoting it yet because we're trying to refine how it's going to be used and also some of the economics of it. But you guys can have it, play with it. If you like it, tell my assistant, and I'll be happy to get it for you forever, so you don't even have to pay for it, but you get a trial on it anyhow.
Maybe I'll put it on the next episode of Office Hours.
Have an interview with it.
Have an interview with JAI.
We may have a solution for you here, Jay.
No, we did. So let me go there. And I don't know that. I would be feeble compared to you guys, but we have 3 versions. We have the user version. We have a version specifically created to be interviewed by podcasters. We've already done 5 tests. Dave Asprey tried to break it and he couldn't, which was pretty cool. But we did 5 different people, and we have a...
So you're bulletproof too.
You
shoved it right up Dave's branding and marketing.
Let's go.
This is the coolest, but I haven't figured out yet how to spend the time to do it. We have a version that was created to be a podcast interviewer.
Oh, wow.
We just haven't used it yet, but they're just sitting in the can. So I am guilty of creating a lot of stuff. I'm a cobbler's kid, has no shoes person. I have no time to optimize it. But in terms of perpetuating my my body of work and my belief system and my business worldview and mental models, that's one way. The other way is to align with people. See, I'm much older than you, and I'm not saying it to be negative, but I have I've been doing this for 50 years, and I'm very proud because I've done it around the world, and just clinically, the estimate's about $75 billion of profits, but I don't have the energy and the infrastructure I used to. So I've always believed that the best way to dramatically grow is to have partners, strategic alliances, joint ventures, all these things. So my goal is to have entities that have more to gain than I do by taking my body of work and by not just deploying it, but re-articulating it in the form that younger people will appreciate. But here's something you'll find interesting. While I know that everybody young likes short, pithy little segments, our most popular YouTube videos are 3 hours, 4 hours, wow. Which is interesting. Yeah, I know. Isn't that ironic?
Jay, you know, from the days when I worked with Tony Robbins and he waxed eloquently about you back then, we have a cultural dilemma that is threatening to shake the foundations of what we think of as America. And that may be hyperbolic, but truly, we need someone like you. And I'd like to hear your answer to this, which is, while, as you define yourself, the older generation understands what is capitalism and its benefits, what we fought for in World War II, et cetera, and the Vietnam War, et cetera. But the truth is, the younger generation does not understand the misconceptions around socialism versus what we can do using and maybe growing the concept of how we use capitalism so that it is just, and yet the younger generation understands why it's so much a better choice. To quote Winston Churchill, you know, it's the worst, except it's better than all the other choices. So I think it's really important of someone of your magnitude in terms of understanding capitalism and its basic skill sets, i.e. marketing, i.e. communication, i.e. partnerships. What could you say and what could you do to turn on the younger generation to the creative genius that is sparked by the healthiest capitalism?
Yeah, that's profoundly articulated. Thank you for that. I'm going to ask David to get me a cut of that and I'm going to transcribe. Thank you. No, I'm serious. I'm serious, very profound. I have started really thinking deeply about what I'll call the younger generation, and it's troubling for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that they don't really have a lot of engagement. Second is they don't, let me give you, I'm ADD, but I used to travel all the time to the Latin America, and I used to travel a lot to Asia, and I was profoundly impacted because there, I don't know if they still do, they revered venerability. They revered age. They were just wonderfully respectful of the wisdom, the knowledge that resided. Today, young people almost have contemptuous disdain, which is ironic, but most of them don't have enough empirical experience with much of anything, particularly any down markets, any challenges. So I think there's a lot of things going on. I think firstly, I stand for, I don't aggressively teach it anymore, but I gave birth to a concept called the strategy of preeminence. And it's a very unique way of elevating your purpose, your being. And I try very hard when I'm exposed to young people to instill and install that realization. The first part is you really want, well, the most important part is most of these people fall in love either with their business, themselves, their industry, whereas if you can fall in love with the people you serve and you're fixated on really making their lives better every time you get into them and you live. Yeah, and so trying to install basically a different purpose. It's interesting, when I meet people, any kind of person, but young ones, I always say, okay, I'm going to ask you a weird set of questions. What do you stand for? Why do you stand for it? Who do you stand for? What stand for it mean? And how do you know it is being manifest and validated? Most of them don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a clue. So I always try to use a sort of a subtle, non-aggressive form of Socratic questioning to get people to come to conclusions themselves. When I learned marketing 101 years ago, I learned it from brilliant, brilliant people. And they said, if you try to thrust your beliefs down somebody's throat, you're going to basically get rejection. But if you give them the basis to come to the conclusion themselves, it's going to have a lot more of an indelible, it's going to take seed or root. So I think the first thing is you can't say everything, you can't tell some younger person everything you believe is wrong. But I will say this, I get troubled. One of the reasons I don't sell much of anything anymore online is I see all these young Turks who are trying to teach a delusional small or medium entrepreneur that one tactic that has never been validated over over cycles of time is going to transform forever their business. And it is really, I shudder to see that, you know, the danger and the irresponsibility of that. But I think what I try to do, I try to give give not just perspective, but question-based insights that cause people to shift their thinking so that they own an elevated or a more rich and meaningful paradigm. I got trained in the early stages of my career on free market capitalism, all the guys that were were into free market thinking, von Mises, and I'm trying to think all the people, Henry Hazlitt, all those people. I was inculcated by people who really loved capitalism. They loved competition. They loved the challenge of adding more value. They were always trying to fill a void or make something that was limited yielding for the consumer much more, much better, more valuable. And I was inculcated on that. And that sort of drove my whole being and my purpose. And when I got started in my career, I'm saying all this to try to translate it down to today, but I never even started trying to make any money. I mean, I wanted to, you know, make a living, but I saw all these passionate entrepreneurs, operative word is passionate, purposeful, possibility-based, who worked their asses off, who were adding value, but they were accepting a fraction, not of the money they could make, but of the impact they could make, of the enhancement they could produce, of the protection. And that was, I was on a mission to do that. I think you've got to get people, young people, to understand the game at much more depth of I don't want to call it granularity, but significance, because I don't think they do. I don't know if that answers evasive or conclusive or abstract.
Well, Jay, it's a pleasure to see you again. And I remember sitting with you on 2-Minute Drill a few months ago, and that was a real pleasure. And but my question is real quick. I just wrote a book called Head of Mentals, and it's about the missing link in culture, in the conversation we're having about culture. And I think that's our self-talk. I mean, you've helped for 30 years, you've helped businesses, you've helped over 10,000 businesses be more successful. And you've worked with leaders one-on-one to help them do that. What's your sense of how important self-talk is to building a great culture? How can it get in the way? How can it help you be successful? And what's one way, just one practical way, you have better conversations with yourself that might help other people?
Wow, that's a bit, you guys are asking some very profound, although they seem elegantly simple, they're very complex. Well, first of all, on self-talk, one of the things I try to impress on entrepreneurs is that everyone's hitching their wagon to their star. Now, young people don't have that kind of a alliance, but if you put that in abeyance for a minute, and that they have the same relative goals as you do, it's just maybe at a lower common denominator. They still have, you know, hopes, dreams, they have financial interests, they have fulfillment interests, they want to feel part, collaborative, and that's the first thing. Then I teach entrepreneurs, your goal isn't to squeeze everything you can out of somebody, it's to grow and develop everything you can within them for a duality. First of all, the majority of people respond very positively to people that want to grow and develop. I don't think any human being, with the exception of a mental infirmary or acts of God that have screwed them up, go into any facet of life without wanting to be greater. I believe greatness is innately part of our DNA. And the only reason you can't help people be great at whatever they do, a great receptionist, a great salesperson, a great shipping clerk, whatever it is because they don't know how and nobody takes the time and effort to do it. The greatest fulfillment that you really get in life is external. I mean, I used to think because I came from a very humble background that having acquiring material shit was going to make, excuse my language, a bunch of things. So I bought all these cars and I got all these toys and it gave me a vicarious thrill for about, I don't know, maybe a week. And then I wouldn't even drive them. I would just sit around and sell them at a discount. It was anticlimactic. The heavens didn't open. The angels didn't trumpet. Nirvana didn't flow down. I believe that an entrepreneur who doesn't have a culture that they can clearly articulate and that is designed to not be a selfish culture, I mean, it's their culture for their self-interest, but it's a culture that enhances and advances everyone, not just their team members, but everybody, their vendors, their clientele. We teach as part of Preeminence, and again, I don't teach it often, but that you have three levels. First of all, you never call anyone who buys from you a customer, because if you look up the Webster's Dictionary definition, a customer is somebody who buys a commodity or a service. If I call you a customer, seriously, what I'm saying between the lines subliminally is I'm no better than a commodity. I'm lucky as hell I get your business because I have nothing unique to offer. A client, on the other hand, is somebody who's under the care, protection, and the well-being of another. It's a much more fiduciary responsibility. And when you accept that, it elevates your sense of purpose, possibility, commitment. But I also say that you have three categories of clients that you serve. One is certainly the people who pay you. The other two are the people you pay, your team members, your vendors, your professionals. And I think you got to understand all that in an integrated way. It's probably not the exact answer you want, but I don't think a lot of young people get that.
I do get that people today work for cultures, not companies. And it takes the legendary insights and experience of someone like Jay Abraham. And we want to make sure not only do we preserve the wisdom, but we amplify it in the correct manner. And I look forward, and I know, Rhett, you and I have discussions about how we can serve Jay and his legacy to make sure that we preserve and amplify and be one of those joint venture partners to maybe even help monetize, which I think he still doesn't mind as well. The incredible Jay Abraham, thank you so much for joining us here on Office Hours.